Okay, Bettina Jean-Louis, June 6th, around 1:30.
June 5th.
June 5th, thank you.
June 5th, yeah.
Yes.
So, I guess if we didn't, we'll assume that we don't know anything about the children's zone. And so, we have looked at the website a little bit, but I think I would be interested in your sense of the history of the place in a few minutes to tell us how it started, how it's developed, and where it is now.
Okay. The organization started in 1970, and it was originally called the Reedland Centers for Children and Families. And from the very beginning, it started as a program that worked with truant youth. The founder, Richard Murphy, he was walking down the street one day, noticed that there were all these kids who were on the street during the school day, and thought, you know, what's going on regarding these truant kids, and decided that he was going to start an agency that was going to start with a program called Truancy Prevention that would focus on getting those kids into school. And as they started doing the work, they really realized that getting kids into school really meant working with families. That, you know, kids were not missing school for reasons that were completely set apart from the dynamics that were going on in their homes. And so social workers started working with families in their homes as well as with the kids in their homes and in the school settings to try to improve attendance in school. And then from there, the organization grew opportunistically as different grants came up, started to do a lot of different things, and came to be known for having very strong programs. Fast forward to 1998 or so, when the organization started talking about taking a new approach to things. We had really strong programs, but really wanted to be a lot more focused and intentional about how the organization was going to proceed. So we started working, and this was before I came in. I came in March of 2002. But we started working with the Bridge Group. BridgeSpan had developed a nonprofit arm called the Bridge Group, and decided that we were going to develop a business plan. And so part of the discussion included talking about the theory of change and making some very painful decisions about jettisoning some programs that were not in line with the theory of change. So for example, there was a very successful, well-known program that dealt with seniors in the community, and we decided that since our focus was going to be on children and their families, that that program was not in line with that. At that time also, we decided that that we needed to change the structure of the organization. We needed to bring in evaluation capacity, a communications capacity. We really needed to expand our development capacity, that we needed to bring in a middle layer of management between the CEO, Chief Executive Officer, and the program managers. So brought in the senior managers and did a lot of shifting around, that we needed to dramatically increase the budget of the organization, because we were going to go from an organization that had a budget of $10 million a year to ultimately having a budget of, I think it's ultimately going to be 70 or 80 million. This year is 50 million, and next year is going to be 58 million.
I'm halfway to being as big as Teachers College.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. That's interesting. And so, somewhere along the line, the organization changed the name from Reedland Centers to the Harlem Children's Zone. And it's a little confusing because the organization is Harlem Children's Zone Incorporated, but there are two parts of Harlem Children's Zone Incorporated. That's the Harlem Children's Zone Project, which is what we're best known for at this time. That was what we started in 2000, the place-based initiative where we were going to serve really well the families that live in a particular community. We started with 23 blocks, we moved from there to 60 blocks, and now we're at 100 blocks. And the idea is that you can't do everything for every child in Harlem, but if you work with a very focused community, then you can do everything for those particular families. And the place-based initiative that we were going to have early and intensive intervention, that we were going to start when the kids were very, very young and continue with them all the way through, initially until they graduated from high school and got into college, but now we've since expanded the mandate to until they graduate from college. So we actually have a college success office that provides structure and support to kids as they go through college as well. And there's just a variety of programs because we recognize that poverty is really complicated and that people who are poor have multitude of issues. So, you know, we're doing obesity work, and we have an asthma initiative. We have a community building initiative, which is really where it all started out. This one building at 119th Street that we organized, and then we moved on to the rest of 119th Street, and then the initial zone, that 23 block area, and then moving outward from there. Several youth development programs, a lot of early childhood programs, the ones that are the focus of the longitudinal study that we're doing, the parenting program, Baby College, with which you are familiar, and other stuff that I'm sure I'm not thinking about. In all the schools that are in the zone, we have AmeriCorps interns who are in the classrooms providing support to the teachers and running after school programs and summer programs in the schools as well. Hmm. So that's the Harlem Children's Zone project. And the other half of the agency is the Beacons and the Preventives.
The what,
The Beacons and the Preventives. So we have three traditional Beacon programs where, you know, you get funding from the Division of Youth and Child Development. You open up the school every day into the evening hours. There are programs for adults and for kids. So it's not just for the folks who are traditionally in that building, but it really is for the community to have social programs and educational programs and, you know, whatever supports that the community needs. And so, for example, those buildings, two of the Beacons have Narcotics Anonymous. So it really is about making the school a community center. And those Beacons work very closely with preventive programs. And the idea is that there are certain families within the communities who cannot take as much advantage of the Beacon programs as they can because they're in such disrepair. There's a possibility that the kids might go into foster care. Mm-hmm. So we provide intensive services to them with caseworkers and social workers, doing home visits, providing counseling, doing the work that helps to strengthen the families so that children do not go into foster care unless it really is necessary.
Is that when you were when we met at Gordon's? Mm-hmm. You mentioned that there were two programs. Is that the second one? That and with the second one being less well known. Is that the?
Yes, the Beacons and Preventives. And actually, there is a third as well. It's technically a different organization, but the Promise Academies, the charter schools.
Yeah.
Each of the charter schools, there are two of them, have their own 501(c)s. So they're each different organizations, but we all consider them part of the Harlem Children's Zone family of programs. The Harlem Children's Zone wrote the charter applications. As a nonprofit community-based organization, we can't actually run schools. So, you know, we've hired the staff and put together a system so that we can run the schools in concert with the work that we do with the Harlem Children's Zone project.
So would that be the schools where you would send the children when you were talking earlier about the following, or is there a school in here?
No. Actually, there are traditional public schools here that we have been providing support to for forever, where the AmeriCorps interns can be found. And then there are the two charter schools that run.
So, because you mentioned, I mean, there's the Baby College, you said there was a pre-K.
Universal pre-K.
That's within this building, or is it?
No, they're not within this building. We have a bunch of storefronts that are throughout the Central Harlem area, Harlem Children's Zone.
And so then when they go to school, do they go to the charter schools or?
No, not necessarily. A lot of the kids go to the public schools in this area. Those kids who enter the lottery and start in kindergarten or sixth grade can go to our charter schools.
Okay. But you also follow some of the other kids that do
with
that
lottery. Yeah, the vast majority of the kids that we serve do not go to our charter schools because in the Promise Academy 1 only takes in 180 kids a year, and Promise Academy 200 kids a year, and Promise Academy 2 takes in 80 kids a year.
So
we're working with, 10,000 children a year.
Yeah, Marilyn Joseph was telling me about that. That's something that I forgot to put in my notes, that that there are more families than spots for, all the 3 year and old up and up programs.
That's true.
Yeah, that's like the GEMS and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, one of the things that we're hoping to do in September is to add an additional 100 slots to the Universal Pre-K program, right, which will help to address some of that issue.
Yeah, she said that she was also doing some work with following some of these families too, to make sure that they don't drop out. So is it mostly the outreach workers at Baby College, or is it other?
I don't know. I know that Caressa Singleton, the senior manager, is the person who's in charge of that. I think it's a combination of staff at the Baby College and also at the Harlem GEMS.
Okay.
Because, those kids are, they get into Promise Academy as three-year-olds, and between the time they're three and when they're five and start kindergarten, we want to make sure that they stay with us. So I think it's a concerted effort to stay in contact with those families and keep them involved with our programs.
Yeah. So it's a lottery within that zone, within those 22 blocks?
Actually, charter schools are open to any child within the city of New York. So if you have a charter school and there are more kids who apply than slots, then you have to have a lottery. So, a kid who lives in Staten Island could come to school here.
Okay.
But we really do try to focus our efforts on getting the kids in this community to apply to the school.
Yeah.
But, there are plenty of kids from Brooklyn and from the Bronx.
Gotten a sense of reputation that's spread through New York.
Yes, it has. I mean, that'll happen when your CEO keeps popping up on national TV.
Anyway, go ahead.
All right. Well, I don't know. Did you want me to talk specifically about the educational programs?
Yeah, in a sense, and the relationship with the people. I mean, in a sense, you one of the questions, sort of just to give you a sense of things that interest me, and I just wrote down whom does the organization want to serve, and what does the organization think that they need, which would be sort of the philosophy of the curriculum of and the pedagogy of what you're doing. And then later, if we have time, sort of who actually does come, and is it what they want, what you would want to give them, and so on. Because you mentioned that a little bit when you were at we were at Ed Gordon's, between what the curriculum and pedagogy is that you might want to do, and there. Mm-hmm. I'm interested because I guess what's your relationship, or do you have any relationship with Comer at Yale, the Comer Schools? Because
as an organization, no.
No, but is so that's what a sense he had a sense of a pedagogy of what schools might be, and so I guess that would be who do you want to serve?
We want to serve the folks who. I mean, should I just talk specifically about the Harlem Children's Zone Project, or should I talk about the agency as a whole?
Well,
I'm interested in getting the agency approach to education, like how do you conceive of education when you're talking about Reedland? You talk about a real youth-centered, getting kids, off the streets and into schools, and what is that now? What does it look like now?
Yeah, I think it still is very much youth-centered. I think that Well, it's a little different at the Beacons, where we have adult programs that are really about addressing adult needs. But at all the other programs, really, I think we're serving adults in the interest of serving children. So, you know, adults are coming to Baby College because it's going to have an impact, we hope, on their kids who are growing up in this community. At Community Pride, our community building initiative, there are a lot of people, particularly a lot of the elders in the community, who do not have children. Mm-hmm. You know, the ones who do the community work, who have the community gardens, who are writing the letters to, you know, council people about, you know, the trash on the streets, the ones who are organizing and going to the tenant block association meetings and the building association meetings. A lot of those people do not have children. Some of them do. But it's probably unusual with regard to the programs in the Harlem Children's Zone Project, in that there is such a focus on grown-ups who don't have children. But even that ultimately is in the service of creating a community for children that has supportive, engaged adults in it. I don't know how that addresses the question of education, though.
My implication, I say, but partially, we are interested in how people talk about education, what counts as education, what does not count as education. Partially because our research is to be very broad, but we want to try to understand people who are in the business in the various ways, and what do they think is educational, or what they think is necessary for education, because in a sense that's what you've been talking about, and what the agency simply clearly is very interested in providing these frameworks for the children.
Yeah, I think, well, when we talk about education, it really does tend to be in the traditional settings. We have a large focus on how kids are doing academically. For all of our programs, you know, we look at measures that have to do with academic success. So for youth development programs, we look at passing the Regents and you know, credit accumulation, getting into college, you know, how much scholarship money kids are getting for college. For our programs with younger kids, there we're also really focused on how they're doing on the state test. And with our Peacemaker, the AmeriCorps interns who are in the schools providing services to the kids, there's a focus there on ensuring that they continue to go to school. You know, they're earning money towards that they can use for college or for graduate school. And while they're with us, we really do try to keep them in school, even though they work long hours. They're working long hours.
Do you guys do the recruiting for those AmeriCorps members?
Yeah.
Okay. Where do you recruit from for that?
I don't know, actually.
They do, you know, from all over the country? Are they from New York?
I don't think they're from all over the country. They really tend to be from this area. Okay. A lot of them are from Harlem. Mm-hmm. But some of them are from the Bronx and from Brooklyn. A lot of it is word of mouth. Mm-hmm. Previous participants will tell their friends, and then they'll get involved with it. Mm-hmm. I don't really know.
Have all of them finished high school before they get involved?
They've all finished high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've just known of some AmeriCorps programs, you know, some which, you know, in the organization where I worked at, took people from very elite schools who already had their degrees and wanted to go to graduate school.
Oh, okay.
Versus, you know, ones that were more workforce-oriented or youth development-oriented that took from neighborhoods where maybe there weren't a ton of, you know, lucrative opportunities available, mm-hmm. and people were then, like you said, word of mouth passed on to say, mm-hmm. this is a a good place.
Yeah, actually, can. Quite a lot of the peacemakers are from this community, mm-hmm. which is very nice in terms of yet another opportunity to build community and to develop a cadre of adults who are invested in helping to improve this community.
Because you mentioned, and I think we reading Linda's field notes about sort of getting, the health program, the health-oriented programs, and getting the kids immunized and so on. Mm-hmm. And that seems very important to me. I mean, in a sense, you get involved in these matters because, I guess as you said, to be sure that the children can do well in school, or in a sense for their own good. I mean, should not be a discussion here. But anyway.
I guess ultimately the end point is that you want to have a bunch of successful, engaged adults. People who can have jobs and support themselves and their families, and who also care about the communities that they live in, and they gotta be alive to get there. Why do we have an asthma initiative? Because that was the number one reason kids were missing school, because it was the number one reason that kids were going to emergency rooms. So it was threatening their lives, and it was threatening their educational futures, and so.
Do you have a sense that the people who come, the mother, the parents that will bring their children here, that they, how do they learn about the children, the Harlem Children's Zone, and what do they want from it? Do you have a sense of what you want to should give them? Is there congruence between the two?
I think they learn about it through their neighbors and friends. Mm-hmm. They learn specifically about Baby College and Community Pride because every cycle, a legion of outreach workers go and knock on people's doors and tell them about the program. ask them if they know anybody who's pregnant. You want some water?
No, that's all right. It's part of aging. Sorry.
All right. and have kids from 0 to 3. I think that why they come to us is because they feel that we've made a promise to them provide the support that they need to ensure that their kids are successful.
With almost all institutions, and sometimes with students. I mean, you're not a student anymore. You get a feeling that between what the professors want and what the student wants, there is a little bit of this tension, or if there is, you wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I know we have a community advisory board, and I know that there are some times when the community advisory board would want us to change direction or focus, and sometimes we've done it. So, for example, when we started out the Harlem Children's Zone, we had a plan. We decided that we were going to start focusing on early childhood, and we were not going to have any youth development programs at all. And then we put together the community advisory board and started talking about the vision, and they said, that's all very nice and well, but there are all these teenagers out there who are shooting each other, who are making life unlivable here in this community, and you really need to do something about them. Mm-hmm. And so we decided that we were going to start TRUCE, which is our first youth development program. So in that way, they played a very big role in changing the course of how we were bringing on programs at the Harlem Children's Zone Project. Other times, they might want us to have more of a focus on the faith community, And we do some work with the faith community, but maybe not as much as they would want. There are certain people who are in specific churches that I'm sure they would like to see more partnership with, you know, their particular church and with Harlem Children's Zone. So we haven't always been able to be as responsive to every single person's
What
desires.
Is the community board?
Community advisory board. Yeah, it's Community Pride, the community building arm of the Harlem Children's Zone Project. They're the ones who really facilitate the meetings of the community advisory board. So they have meetings every 2 months or every 3 months, and they just chart, they talk about the progress and what's needed and what isn't needed. And one of the great things is that as we've moved up from one northern expansion to the next, that the people who have been involved with the community building have been able to partner with us to go up to the tenant associations in the northern expansion, and up to the block associations in the northern expansion, and to talk about the Harlem Children's Zone, to share their perspective and to get people really engaged and excited about it. So that's been a great resource.
So some of the people on that board would be ministers of some of the churches?
Some of the people are ministers. Some of the people are business owners. Some of the people have run community gardens for forever. A lot of the people are officers in block and tenant associations. So really people out there in the community who have been working for years and are really to help to improve Harlem, are really invested in it.
Yeah. I mean, that's partially, at least from my sense of being interested in education, the work of many of these leaders without necessarily a very big institution. I mean, like the garden, the leader of the gardens, I never thought too much about people who had been in charge of a garden, as in some sort of way having learned about the community, what can be done and what needs to be done.
Because they're out there every day. So they've really got their pulse on everything that's going on.
That's interesting. Because, the churches are so evident. I mean, we have been walking up and down the streets for the past few months.
And within this community and other communities as well, there's also a lot of organizing around saving community gardens. As you know, property has become more and more desirable. These lots that used to have garbage that nobody ever really cared about, that were reclaimed by communities, are now really hot properties. And people have been fighting to maintain their community gardens, so it's a pretty big issue.
Yeah.
One of the questions that I wanted to ask too is how you keep bringing in all these different aspects of living in Harlem and these different aspects of community organizing, right? That you started as a truancy program, and then some of the conversations we've had about realizing that with housing, families are having to move out, so then you decide, okay, well now we need to go into housing. These kinds of issues. So can you talk a little bit about that kind of expansion, how that happened?
Sure. I wasn't here from the very beginning. Some decisions were made prior to my tenure. While I have been here, I have really seen that one of the good things about the organization is that we're able to change direction and add things as necessary. And I think that the reason that we've been able to have that flexibility is because we've gotten a lot of people who provide general funds to us. So, if you provide funds to the Harlem Children's Zone Project as a whole, then, you don't really care if your money is being spent on an obesity project in this community, or if it's being spent on asthma, if it's being spent to buy books and, we have libraries in each of the schools. So that means that as you identify needs, you're really able to be responsive to them and to change directions. I mean, sometimes it can get you in trouble because you just end up growing and growing and growing and doing too much. And our board has actually said that obesity is the last thing that we're going to do. I don't want to hear about any more projects. But it also does buy you a lot of currency in the community, because people do see that, well, we needed asthma and we have an asthma initiative. We, you know, we needed obesity and, you know, we're addressing that. Because we've been able to be really responsive to needs as they arise, I think that it signals to people that, you know, we're in touch with the community, we have our pulse in the community, and that we're willing to do whatever is required to make things work for people here. And so there's a lot of trust inherent in that, which, and I think that people that we have been able to build a lot of relationships with people where they trust that, you know, after going to baby college, you know, if we develop the three-year-old journey program, that there's really a good reason for it, that there's something good that's going to occur there, and people will come and they'll try it out. And then the next time around, people have heard that it is good, and then even more people will come. So I think that that helps to convince people that that what we're doing is thoughtful and probably will be useful for them and their families, even if they may not immediately see how, the utility.
This is so great, because this is, I mean, these are, the way that I've heard this issue talked about in, say, you know, New York Chinatown, is that, you know, you need, you know, say you have a really small nonprofit organization, community-based organization, and you know the director is somebody who necessarily needs to go out and be able to talk to funders. Mm-hmm. But then what happens is you have this divide between the director and the people who are actually out there working in the community. Mm-hmm. And that even if that person grew up in that community, they go away to go to school.
Yeah.
And there's some social distance that opens up, and that there ends up being this kind of friction. Mm-hmm. And part of what I think you're talking about here is that people on the ground are seeing the leaders as responsive, as seeing programs emerge directly out of their needs.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, you know, I may have a different perspective than somebody who lives in this community, but I do think that that's true.
So actually, you have a permanent staff. Because I had the sense, reading again the baby college, there's some staff that is come out of people, I mean, who are part of the people that you had been working with.
Oh.
Like volunteer, I mean, half volunteers. And then you have some professional staff that come from outside, or do you?
We really do not have so many volunteers, actually. We kind of frown on the volunteer thing, because it's hard to control people. It's so much easier to get people to do what you need when you pay them.
Yes.
But I got sidelined by the volunteer thing.
Well, no, just thinking about the staff. I mean, there's a CEO, there's a professional.
Yeah,
talking about middle management and so on. By the time, I mean, in the sense that was the question, but even the staff here, I mean, are they recruited from around here, or?
I think the administrative staff, the sixth floor staff, the development people, the evaluation people, the fiscal people, who else is here? IT, probably have proportionally senior managers, proportionally more people who are not from this community. But even here, though, like in fiscal, there are 8 people working in fiscal, and one of them used to be a peacemaker. So she was an AmeriCorps intern. Then she got her degree while she was working, and now she's working in fiscal full time. One young man who controls all the checks, tracks all of the purchases, he started working with us at 16, delivering things for us. So throughout the agency, there are a whole bunch of people who started out with us as teenagers doing a variety of things. And in fact, there are program directors who started out as AmeriCorps interns with us. There are four that I can think of our program directors. So, and people, a lot of people who started out at 16 working after school, two program directors who are not AmeriCorps interns but who started out as teens. One was in our programs and now is running one of the beacons. And one started out as a teenager working after school with us and now is a program director. So for development, everybody is from outside because that's like a very specific field. For evaluation, everybody's from outside. I mean, I grew up in Harlem, but I haven't lived here for a very long time. Fiscal, there are actually a lot of people who grew up in this community here. And outside, within the programs, there are a lot of people who are from the communities, who are from similar communities. There are particular pockets, like our Truce program, which is our youth development through the arts program. That one tends to have a lot of people who are not from this community, people who are artists, who come at their interest in youth development from a different perspective. But for the most part, the programs really do employ a lot of people who live in this community. You know, we have about 1,500 employees, and about two-thirds of them are part-timers.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of part-timers are from this community.
Yeah.
And so that really is another way that people find out about the programs.
Yeah.
You know, there are tons of people who work here who are either in our programs or who have kids in our programs or whose friends are in our programs. So that's just another way.
And they have their friends and their family.
The community.
Are you one of the major employers in Harlem, Central Harlem?
I would think that we would have to be.
But particularly the independent ones, I mean, if you don't count the schools, the public schools, and so on.
I would think so. You know, we're very, very visible. Even before we had this building, and since we've had this building, even more so. You know, various times you'll see people with, you know, all the Children's Day T-shirts and other gear on.
Now, you mentioned briefly, I mean, when I started walking around here, I mean, I have my image of Harlem. And I never walked around like a lot of people who live at the Morningside Heights. And of course, now one walks around. I mean, we are doing our project more or less like you are doing yours, localizing it. And so at first we say we are between 125th and 135th and 45th Madison, and so on. So that, again, I like the idea that like you have of a place. Otherwise, you score people around. You never know who they are, and you can't cross-reference matters. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's part walking there, is that things are changing. In fact, it's we will have, I would say, one of our issues when we talk about our work is, well, this is not really an inner city anymore. There's all these the people, whites are coming in, and so on and so forth. And does that have has that an impact on your work? Or is
I mean, one of the things that's a really big issue is that for people who lose their apartments here, they're gone. There's just no way that they can get another apartment in this community. So we actually have a funder who has developed a fund for us where we can give loans to people who you know, are having trouble paying their rent, whatever. You know, you wouldn't want somebody to lose their apartment because they're $200 behind, you know, or even, you know, $2,000 behind. Another thing is that a lot of our youth who go off to college or to college in this community, you know, if they want an apartment of their own, you know, it's not really going to be in the Harlem Children's Zone, which is a really big issue because part of the model was you develop this cadre of adults who, you know, help to build a community. So that has been a bit of an issue. But there do continue to be some pretty massive public housing complexes in this area. And when you go to the schools in the Harlem Children's Zone area, it's poor kids. You know, people with money are not sending their kids to the schools. So it is the schools still continue to be a really good place to provide direct services. Hi, Michelle. Okay. I'll work on it. For what state stuff? Oh no, I'll just bring what I have. Okay, bye bye.
Okay, yes. Well, we don't want to keep you too long.
I think I was talking about how the neighborhood does change, but that there are still poor people here for as long as those people don't lose their apartments. You know, yeah. Last year we had four families that were burned out of their apartments. Those people cannot live in Harlem anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's a problem.
See, one thing that I've been thinking, especially thinking about our way of thinking about education is sort of a kind of political education about the conditions in New York City and mm-hmm. so on. Now that's may not be a program and so on, but you have a sense that people talk about these things. I mean, and develop an awareness of it, or is it would be mostly the community leaders, or?
I think it's mostly the community leaders. I think that. At Community Pride, the community building part, that there is a lot of discussion about, community districts and power and, how it's a lot easier for, a black association to get a council person to listen than, a group of random people. But for the most part, I don't think other programs talk as much about those issues.
Would it be, could we speak with some of the other program directors about some of the things that Harlem Children's Zone does?
I'll ask Jeff,
yeah.
Our CEO,
yeah.
about
yeah.
it.
I'm interested in this community pride organization, mm-hmm. so. I know there's several groups at Teachers College that work with Truce and teach, mm-hmm. Bring the students in, the youth in. So
yeah.
I'm interested in taking a closer look at.
Yeah, I think things. I understand all the issues about the families and that, but staff members, if we yeah. could be introduced to some of the leaders in of those programs to get more sense. I mean.
Part of the issue for us is we're trying to get educated about Harlem, mm-hmm. and it sounds like some of these programs, mm-hmm. a lot of that is happening. Of like you said, the people who are on the ground who are have their finger on the pulse, mm-hmm. and we would love to meet some of those people and have them talk to us maybe separately from the Children's Zone, mm-hmm. Just to help us understand. What the issues are, what people are already doing, those kinds of things.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess in the grand sense, I mean, we're there's so much written in the literature on the poor, and always as if the poor were by themselves, and then they are blamed for their poverty. And our goal would be to try to write something about an area in Harlem. Again, not simply talking about New York City, urban in general, but where you can see the multiplicity of the people, mm-hmm. which is why we're interested as much in the leaders. We want to be able to present a totality rather than just focus on what's wrong with some people, which is useful and so on. But
we should come to our Peace March. Every year in August, we do a Children's March for Peace. And we start at 123rd between 6th and 7th, and just march down Lenox and over to Marcus Garvey Park, and then we have some entertainment, but we just talk about acknowledge any people that we knew over the course of the year that died as a result of being shot or some other violent means. But it's a really good, it's a good gathering place for community members, and it's also a very you know, interesting perspective of the HCZ within the broader community as you know we're walking down the streets, and actually pretty fascinating.
Yes, you'll be here. Or
yes.
One person that actually I know because she's a student, or she was a student, Miss Wessler, I always forget with. She's one of in the one of the health programs. Do you know her?
Asthma.
Could be Wessler.
I know. I recall who it was. She works for the Harlem Children's Health Project.
Yeah.
Which is our clinic on the fifth floor of this building, right underneath here, and she's actually an employee of. Columbia's? The Children's Health Project.
Okay.
No, it's the Children's Health Fund. So we've given them the space, and they are running a clinic out of this building.
Yeah, because she had mentioned the project. I said, well, I don't really want to come here without having talked to people.
Yeah.
So if she said that she was willing to, then we could, I mean, that's...
Okay, I thought there was a picture of her here. But this is my teammate.
Oh. So, would it be all right if we spoke with her?
She's not our employee.
She's not your employee. Okay.
You know, speak with her as you wish.
Okay. That's why. That's it. Those are the interesting distinctions. Since she said, she was there in that building, so I thought maybe she was. And so the relationship with there's another health program in Teresa Hotel, is it the same thing or is it related? It's funded by the School of Public Health at Columbia.
No, I don't think it's related to us.
Related to us, yes, because when I mentioned that other program, Ed Gordon said, is that the one, Adam Zanz? Apparently, no, it's another one.
No.
We have someone we know there. Anyway, thank you very much.
Okay.
That's helpful.
And actually, this was very helpful for me just to get a larger sense of all the programs. So,
I have a strange perspective because, you know, it's a global perspective, but it is from a very high position. So, wasn't sure how helpful it would be.
We would love to talk with the program directors if we can. You know, I mean, I'm going to speak with Marilyn just in terms of my work because I think she's curious about what I'm doing, and that'll you know give us an idea of baby college at least. But you know, if Mr. Canada's okay with us,
He tends to be very protective of their time though. That's because so many people
Talk
with.